avant-garde, grand old man of the perpetual avant-garde. He's one of Zappa's models, and it was Frank himself who suggested integrales be performed. Maybe it's integrales, I'm not sure how they say it. The general view of music lovers, in brackets, the general view of music lovers was that the rendition was flashy and hopelessly distorted. Now the mothers entered and climbed to their second-story stage. Eight of them, counting Frank, Ian Underwood on electric piano, doubling on sax. The program says, quote, an M.A. in music and child prodigy at the piano, unquote. Ray Collins, in brackets, an original mother invention going back to freakout days. Ray Collins with wild Titian hair playing the tambourine and singing. James Motorhead Sherwood, quote, sax and other things. Zappa, slim but mesomorphically muscled, resplendent for him in lime and yellow, horizontally striped hip huggers that fit his impudent buttocks. Remember I was telling you about his impudent buttocks? That's what it was. His snobbish buttocks.
Yeah.
Remember when I saw him in March 7, 1970, a few months before this, at the Olympic Auditorium? Yeah, impudent buttocks. That's what he has. So this guy, this writer, noticed it. Resplendent for him, these pants in lime and yellow horizontally striped hip huggers that fit his impudent buttocks like wool jersey, top of the purple long-sleeved T-shirt. Mother of invention Motorhead, in brackets, who has teen appeal, according to Frank, in quotes, teen appeal, was attired in a white Letterman sweater with three varsity stripes, and beneath that, a Kelly Green Fillmore East T-shirt. His lengthy hair tied with a ribbon in the back, giving him the effect of a rather prognathous member of the Girls Athletic Association field hockey team. Now, it was Mother Motorhead that we were with in the little cottage a year later, on June 4th, 1971, when Zappa was closing the Fillmore East with Yoko and himself, John Lennon and Yoko. And what else to say about that? Motorhead. And that little cottage back in March 1970 was where Ainsley Dunbar played the little record that to drive us mad. He repeated it 500 times. So Zappa's gollywog hair was similarly tied, and he displayed the trademark Zapata facial hair, which somewhat resembled the silhouette of an explosion over any Wheaton beneath that splendid banana nose. Any Wheaton, what's that? A volcano somewhere? Anybody know where that is?
No.
Okay, his facial hair, which somewhat resembles the silhouette of an explosion over any Wheaton beneath that splendid banana nose. So then, a little speech by Zappa, quote, we're kind of tense. The tape recorder breaks down. When you play music in a hall designed for basketball, you take your chances. Maybe someday, if music becomes competitive and violent, they'll have halls this big designed for music. Will Don Preston, our organist, please stop vomiting and come up on the stage? That's what we heard Frank saying that the crowd was laughing at. I couldn't make out any of that, but that's what he said. In the program, it describes Don Preston, Don DeWild Preston, all keyboard instruments and weirdness, joined the group in the summer of 1966. He plays the monster in the forthcoming Mother's movie, Uncle Meat. He also plays the monster in 200 Motels. The Mothers open with an old Angels Nifty, Ooh La Dee Da, My Boyfriend's Back. And then, without intro, segued into their version of Integrales, which, well, sounded like Varese's work in some spots. Then Zappa, putting it to the Dorothy Chandlers directly beneath him, launched into an original recitative, which embroidered on an Oedipal frame, quote, Father, I Want to Kill You, sung by Jim Morrison in The Doors of the End. So we've done this before, but we'll do it again. This has a few more words. It says, the teenagers, Zappa says, you're uptight, sitting all alone in your teenage bedroom. You're tense. Now, note Zappa tells the audience they're tense at the beginning. We're kind of tense. Now he says that the little teenager is tense in his bedroom. And you got to go get your cookies. Around the wall are little cutout decals of sailing boats, donkeys, and little Bo Peep. You're lying in your flannel pajamas and your teenage sheets. All you mothers out there know what teenage sheets are. They're the ones with the yellow and brown stains. That was the cum stains they were talking about. You tiptoe through the living room to the kitchen to find the cookie jar, your favorite oral gratification, oatmeal raisin cookies. They're in the Aunt Jemima cookie jar. You rip her head off and stuff your sweaty teenage hand into her body. You grab a cookie. Tempting raisins, a fascinating tactile sensation. Look at that. He used the word tactile. Fascinating tactile sensation.
Yes.
He knows. You know you're going to get off on it. You go to the ice box, open the door, take out a box of milk, and pour it into your drinking hole. But he still hasn't quite got it off. He then goes into his mother's... He then goes into his mother's room and cries, Mother, I want to kill you. The milk, yes, there's the milk dilemma. He then goes into his mother's room and cries, Mother, I want to kill you. But she ignores him, being too busy putting silver and green and blue stuff around her eyes. And anyway, she knows where he's at. She's washed his sheets. He goes into his father's room and makes a similar death threat. But his father, busy masturbating, ignores him too. I think he missed the actual transcript of beating off, with the magazine. This author didn't get that part, I guess. So then he steps out of what Zappa's saying and says, the Dorothy Chandler seemed unperturbed by how near the knuckle this struck. And then the Phils below, in a little arch happening, walked off, blowing discordant sounds. In rebuttal, Frank directed the band to hit different notes, and on about the fourth one came up with his middle finger extended, fuck you, while the mother screamed, ah, as if they'd been goosed. The battle of the bands was on. Remember, they used to have battle of the bands in L.A. at the El Monte Stadium. El Monte Legion. Ian still hasn't shown up. Okay, intermission. It was an anonymous Roman who first recognized that the mother invention is necessity. It is not known if Frank Zappa acted on this pearl when he formed the Mothers of Mother's Day, 1965, but some sort of felt need must have been met, because they soon became the leading underground rock group in the United States. Born in Baltimore on December 21st, 1940, Frank grew up in Lancaster, California, a Mojave Desert town. Well, he didn't grow up there, just there for high school. Towns such as Lancaster always have American Legion posts, where in the 50s they held dances that they hyped over the radio. Quote, come and meet old friends and make new ones. No Levi's or Capris, please, unquote. And then the next day, the news on the same station would say there were 5 knifings at the dance. Guys got high on white port and lemon juice and wore leather jackets, peggers, and hair in a ducktail. Girls wore full skirts with 5 petticoats. The mothers became regulars at the Whiskey on Sunset Strip and were featured regularly in the Ziedler & Ziedler full-page freakout ads, which appeared in the Freep, or the Los Angeles Free Press, to non-Californians, and were the forerunners of all the freaky ads you see now. The term freakout, the title of his first album, was popularized by Frank, who described it almost pedantically back then as, quote, a process whereby an individual casts off outmoded and restricting standards of thinking, dress, and social etiquette in order to express creatively his relationship to his immediate environment and the social structure as a whole, unquote, unquote. He formed a society called the United Mutations to accept freaks, that is, anyone who wanted to make a decision for freakiness. Groups of unpaid dancers in the early days always vied to appear at the mother's performances. Vito and his dancers became a frequent attraction. Vito, a sculptor, middle-aged hippie, and charter member of United Mutations, has now left the country. Freakout also introduced to the world Susie Cream Cheese, a fulsome embodiment of teenage middle America. The songs in Frank's albums, almost all written by him, have such titles as America Drinks and Goes Home, Who Are the Brain Police, Hungry Freaks Daddy, and Cheap Thrills in the Back of My Car. A critic once said that Frank's songs and his renditions of them are, quote, conglomerates of humor, satire, chance nonfiction, and the grotesque, punctuated with snorts, oinks, and boings, sprinkled with bits of Motown, Sacco and Vanzetti, R&B, Rosemary DeCamp, and Stravinsky. Frank said of his own music, quote, we're presenting a chemical monstrosity, not really a panacea, but it is a useful household preparation, something like ammonia, unquote. Remember, the Bible's about chemistry? Well, there's Frank. He knows about the chemical ground. If Frank Zappa is not a household word to you, like ammonia, It may have something to do with the fact that most amplitude-modulated stations, or AM stations, can't stand his freaky porno sack. What? You say, wow? At what?
Well, that sounds like I on the amplitude modulation.
Oh, yeah. Okay, if Frank Zappa is not a household word to you like ammonia, it may have something to do with the fact that most amplitude-modulated stations can't stand his freaky, porno, sacrilegious thumb in the eye. Thumb in the eye. His freaky, porno, sacrilegious thumb in the eye. And they would be more likely to say shit over the air than Zappa. They'd be more likely to say shit over the air than Zappa. The word Zappa. Few know it, but Frank was a pioneer in the use of amplified and electronically modified instruments, being credited with laying the groundwork that influenced the design of many commercially manufactured electromusical devices. There's the inventor part. Probably most importantly, Zappa was the first to realize that kids didn't want, quote, pretty notes. That is, amplifiers that play mellow tones. He said, that's for the flabby martini-drinking generation. Kids want sound. He said, and if your ears, they want sound. And, of course, that was what he called in Life magazine's the bone conduction. So he knows that music
is changed.
Yeah,
but also McLuhan said that the new music is not about really the melody, but the effect of being turned on the vibration in your body.
And pressing. He said it's like foam rubber pressing against you. That's what they wanted to hear. Kids want sound, Zappa said. And if your ears hear it as a whine, a whistle, fuzz, the feedback scream that NBC pays engineers millions to get rid of, that's music to us today, and the kids love it if you hate it. And the kids love it if you hate it. You go to one of their concerts. You want to find out what your daughter is up to. So you go and you walk in and you say, quote, that damn amp is up so loud I can't make out the words, unquote. The kids love that because they already know the words, and they know you don't. The amplifier is their weapon of destruction, unquote. Remember weapons of destruction during the famous war in the Bush era? So Zappa is calling the amplifier a weapon of destruction. Zappa once suggested giving that name to an amplifier built by a company for which he acted as technical advisor. And then he suggests another name, or maybe just death, he added. Among the mother's other albums are Room in the Jets, a quasi-nostalgic revisitation to the 50s high school R&B, Uncle Me, Lumpy Gravy, and Burnt Winnie Sandwich. Hot Rats is Frank without the Mothers. Weasel's Rip My Flesh is the first live Mothers album, and Chunga's Revenge the latest. His album titles read like the menu in some infernal Mephistophelian restaurant. Note that. It's in a fucking restaurant. Remember, his lab is called later the Utility Muffin Research Kitchen. So his album titles read like the menu in some infernal Mephistophelian restaurant. Freudian scholars will notice a certain addiction to unsavory food items. Now, this is a good summary of a lot of the stuff we ran over through the many hours. On stage, the Mothers are by far the most Yeah.
I just wanted to comment, because before I never understood why people would be so turned on by sports, by ball games, and for example, when there is the World Football Cup, here everything is frozen, everybody's in front of the TVs in the cafes and the restaurants. It's really, all are full, everybody's just looking at the TV.
Right.
And I could not understand this phenomenon, but like he's saying, someday we're going to have these halls like for music. Now we have them for
like sport.
The sport.
Yeah.
And I think because it's like a type of medicine that helps people fight these phantom pains, or like McLuhan was saying, people need this audience participation, this identity, to feel part of something, to fight back the effects of the environment.
Right.
But before I could not understand that. And
now you can.
He's trying
to take
do
understanding
the meeting. Same.
Frank is doing the same thing, you're
saying? Yeah, well, Frank was trying to do what sports can do with music.
Good point. And yeah, good point. You know, he once in Ottawa, he bumped into the Ottawa Rough Riders, you know, major team in the Canadian Football League, and I don't know where, in the airport, and he convinced them. He convinced the whole team to come on stage and just stand there for a short while. They came over to the concert, and the whole team came on. He wanted to bring in the sporting thing, and McLuhan talked about the sporting dynamic. And so he's predicting that, you know, culture will become an athletic competition. And if you read the games chapter and understand media, it's beautiful the way McLuhan describes how games are art forms, because just as paintings in that mirror the drama of the individual, games mirror the drama of the society, so that the early quiet industry of the 19th century was mined by baseball, but the more violent industry of the 20th century, it needs the violence of football and basketball. So the sports, he says, acts out the tensions in society. It's a recognizable mirror of the drama that's going on in your regular workaday life. So they are an art form in that sense.
And also,
so
I suppose because, like you said, innovation brings war, and there is so much innovation that, I mean, we're in a permanent state of war, and this will be like a way to replace the real fighting.
Right.
It's sports are the war. We need to release this tension of too much innovation.
Right, and you know how he defined sport? Sport is war under wraps. So we have more and more sport, more and more war, you know, a programmed war, for a population just blitzed out of their fucking minds with this endless innovation. Let's see. And so then you have the popularity, like 30, 40 years ago, of people wearing baseball caps and sneakers. Everybody turned into athletes. They all were citizens on the front between civilian military fronts. That division disappeared. Everybody was gone to war, but it had to be a sport version of war, so everybody started wearing their fucking baseball caps backwards because everybody was an athlete or wore under wraps.
And then you have all the casualties of war. Bert and I have been emailing about all the head injury, the football head injuries, the concussions, and finally they're... That movie that Will Smith did brought it out in the open about these traumatic head injuries. I wrote a bit of a blog about it, that least they could be doing is taking magnesium. But, yeah, there's all these casualties of war, and the soccer moms, you know, started suiting up their kids with all kinds of, you know, helmets and everything. When we were kids, we just drove bicycles, you know, and didn't even think about helmets, and nobody got hurt. And now it's all, it is war.
All right.
Yes.
And McLuhan said it was war under wraps 50 years ago, people. 60 years ago. And you never even heard the idea until I told you. That's how far behind everybody is.
Yes, and I think Friday here in Germany, they allowed this type of medicine like Prozac for children from 11 years old, they can take this type of medicament. Before, the age was, I think, higher. But now they lowered the age that children can also take that type of thing.
And they give it out for free?
No, I don't know. But before, it was not allowed for children, but now they make a version for younger children because the people are in this state of freaking out. Everybody's taking these type of drugs and medicine.
And you notice that among your friends.
Now,
all your friends at work and in your social life are on medication. It's normal to be on some fucking stupid drug.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, and now it will be normal even for children to take this type of thing.
Yeah. That's the, you know, the Brave New World sort of said one drug, Soma, but he didn't predict such many drugs that people would consume, like 10, 15. So it's further than what Huxley predicted. Okay, so Ion's here. I'm just going to finish this.
So the favorite oral gratification is no longer cookies, but this.
Right, right. Brain chemistry. So I'm going to finish this section, then we'll...
Ion!
Yes, but I'm going to finish this section, then we'll bring Ion in. So they're saying... Zappa's album titles read like the menu in some inferno Mephistophelian restaurant, or Mephistophelian restaurant. Freudian scholars will notice a certain addiction to unsavory food items. On stage, the Mothers are by far the most demonstrative of rock groups. It's multimedia from the word go. And you can expect to see bits of business such as a doll mutilated, a gas mask put on, a bag of vegetables unpacked and examined, a variety of obscene sign language, and a performance of what Frank calls dead air. This is forewarned by space intervals of sound or honks, then silence. Mother Motorhead may then give Frank a shoeshine. This maddening insouciance is maintained, or maddening indifference. Hey, Carol, could you hold the music, the noise for a minute? Now, this maddening insouciance or indifference is maintained until the audience begins to crack. Then Frank strolls to the mic. And he says, it brings out hostilities in you, doesn't it? So just as Dave Worster was asking Krishnamurti in 1966, are you asking us to experience violence? Frank's doing the same thing. He's trying to make people aware of the violence in their behavior, the latent violence. So he strolls to the mic after people have gotten pissed off at the dead air. It brings out hostilities in you, doesn't it? Unquote. Today, Frank Zappa holds such establishmentarian titles as leader and musical director of the Mothers of Invention and president of Bazaar Incorporated, an underground rock conglomerate located on Wilshire Boulevard, which includes Bazaar Records and Straight Records. In brackets, he is fond of little put-ons in his Bazaar liner notes such as, quote, Captain Beefheart, vocal, courtesy, Straight Records, unquote. He includes an underground rock conglomerate. So he's making these companies the same time as the Beatles are making Apple. An underground rock conglomerate located on Wilshire Boulevard, which includes Bazaar Records and Straight Records, a management firm, a public relations agency, several music publishing companies, a film production company, and a book division that will start off with publication of the Groupie Papers, which never happened. In brackets, he may be on the way to becoming the first underground tycoon, the Daddy Warbucks of freakdom. Close bracket. Frank lives in Laurel Canyon, a pass between Hollywood and the San Fernando Valley, where he works in the basement of his house, which he shares with his wife Gail, his daughter Moon Unit, who is 1.5 years old, and an infant son they call Dweezil. Now, is that true? She's 2.5 because she's born in September of 67, and this is May 70, so got that wrong. So 2.5. His first film, Bert Winnie Sandwich, a documentary about the Mothers, is being previewed at this writing. His next film, Captain Beefheart versus the Grunt People, is in production. Now, we read the script of that, and it never got made. He is musically knowledgeable. His instructions to his group may go like this, quote, play 4-4 for 10 bars, then 17-8 for 3 bars, then 22-8 for 1 bar. All played so fast and tight you don't know what time it is. Look at that. Played so fast and tight you don't know what time it is, unquote. So he's showing the no time, or the electric speed up. He fancies himself a serious musician and once said, quote, I got tired of playing for people who clap for all the wrong reasons. Those kids wouldn't know music if those kids wouldn't know music if it came up and bit them on the ass, unquote. He is, he said, a composer who works with rock rather than a simple rock musician with no consciously artistic pretensions. He is a composer who works with rock rather than a simple rock musician with no consciously artistic pretensions. So he's saying he does have consciously artistic pretensions. So we'll read the rest later. I guess the crowd would like to talk to Ion. So let's proceed. So the exclusive ivory tower world of Roxy and Bert is no more. They must join the Hoi Polloi.
No, but we want to include Zion in this thing. And do you remember
what
we were wondering about how I that we should include Ion also in the Zappa thing and ask him how he's composing with this?
Oh, good point. Good point.
Let's finish up with
Ion commenting on how Zappa preceded the amazing composing that of the new song that Ion does. So, before we let everybody loose. Let's bring in, we've never had Ion in the Zappa performance. Mr. Ion, I've noticed that the way Frank conducts the band with his hand signals, he's modulating all the different time signatures, the different realities with the different instruments, and it's very complex and very skillful how he juggles all these things. I imagine you're looking at the Ionauts here, looking at all the juggling of their realities as you figure out responses to their forms of communication. Is this an accurate description, Ion, of what you're doing? Is Frank miming your hand signals for the blind?
To pose is to nose is the throes to compose is the answer we suppose.
Awesome, awesome. Are you quoting anybody, Ion? What is that?
We're quoting Bob. Just Bob.
Oh, I said that. Okay, I never said that.
You don't even know what you didn't have for breakfast yesterday.
True. I do not notice. I am the most unobservant, unaware, asleep guy. And it works for me, right? I'm mindless.
Yes, but I'm always in awe in how things are connecting, and how, for example, you go back to things you said at the beginning, and you repeat them, and then these things are revealed. So I see, in a way, all these concepts of everything happening at the same time, the synchrony and the conceptual continuity are actually, in a way, very ionic in the way in which you are composing also with this type of tools.
Just like the observers, it makes it look very simple, but only because it's being done all the time. So it's not. It's already been done. So it makes us look really, 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 really extraordinary when it's not. It's just basically by rote, as Bob would say.
Right. Now, Roxy, you're not addressing that to me. You address it that you're astounded by Ion's conducting ability. That's what you just said, right?
Well, the composing, because I had the impression this is like your mental jazz that is being done in the moment, but Ion is saying it's already done. It's a song that was composed before by you or by Bob or by both, or how did that happen?
It already happened. That's why the effects preceded it.
Right. Now, and I understand that as if you actually look at what eternity is, we've been here beyond time forever. So that means, if you think of it as a long, long time, there was time for everything and every variation to happen. Because you're in eternity, and that's why you would conclude that everything's already happened, because you've been here that long. Correct?
Well, you're still trying to use it as a false premise of time for a length of it. But if you can figure out that, number one, you started off and there wasn't any black holes. That was supposition. There might be black holes. There's something like a black hole. There might be a white hole or a black hole or some kind of hole that they don't know about. So then you come along and they prove that there's now it's everybody knows that there's black holes. Everybody. No question, no problem. That's known now, right? Well, now that you've proved that, now you had to have, you had to prove that there was no gravity. Or that gravity was not a time-proving element. And when gravity is not a time-proving element, then guess what happens?
There's the thing.
Everything happens.
Well, you can, you no longer judge by time. It's just like gravity. You have gravity, but you're not bound by it. You're not bound by gravity anymore.
Right.
You can overcome gravity, and you know it, and you know it. But beforehand, you were judged by it, doomed, as it were.
So all these concepts, for example, energy, matter, time, space, I have the impression they were all never understood. And are all these things also disappearing? Space, or concept of matter?
They're being reparations, yes. But you did it right. The reparations of matter, yes, okay.
But Ion, the way Zappa was conducting multiple time rates happening as fast as possible, so there was, he was trying to show no time by having the little man play on different collage cycles of rates, and he's directing with hand verbal ESP. Is that how you see all the people responding to you right now, listening, vibing, you know, looking and thinking?
Yeah,
you're watching,
banging, rubbing one out, even now. That's right, Bob.
You mean shooting, killing? It just shot something.
All of it.
Is Frank, can we say that Frank was miming that as best as a little human could do? Was he trying to intimidate? No, to anticipate the scenario of Ion's perspective.
Introspective, but yes.
Okay. So, unless we can get Ion to say other things, we'll leave it at that point. Now, here's what's incredible. There's someone on the phone, and it says cell phone Nova Scotia, Halifax, Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, Canada. I've never seen that before. Someone from Halifax. We must see who this is. And we open the mic. 902-292. Who are you? You're from Halifax, Nova Scotia. And you say you have the guts to reveal your identity. Are you Art McKay? Are you Greg Skinner? Are you
Polly Wimbledon.
Come on, speak. Don't be afraid. I've never seen. Look, it says cell phone Nova Scotia, Halifax, Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, Canada. It's the Maritimes. And, look, they're speaking. Go ahead. Who is it? Lon Dubinsky, Duncan Harper, Rick Rofe. Who else?
Bob.
Charlotte Harper.
Bob.
Remembering everybody. Yes, who is it?
Bob. It's Sky Goddess,
yes.
Sue.
Well, you've got a new number, Sue.
Hey, Sue.
Hi. And of course, you caught me just as I jumped into the shower. I'm listening. So I'm here soaking wet. Can I talk to you in a few more minutes?
Yes. Now you.
Although it's pretty hot. You're pretty hot wet, honey, though. It's all right.
Look, I can see everything. But yeah. Sue, you have a new phone number. That's what I didn't recognize, correct?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
Right. And you have the most words. You're a loud person. It says Halifax, Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, Canada. Never has there been that many words underneath the number. It takes up a huge space.
Well, there you go.
Okay. Okay, just put the phone on mute, put it down, remain hooked in, and you'll come back later. And we'll get
thanks a lot.
5 or 10 minutes. Okay.
Yeah, thanks.
All right.
Thanks, Ion. Thanks,
yeah.
Bob. Bye.
Oh, wait.
I would like to understand, what are the kingdoms in earth and the kingdom in heaven? What are these two spaces?
They're interchangeable. You divided them. Heaven's just a sin away.
And
two kingdoms.
So as we become one, the kingdoms are also
on earth
one.
As it is in heaven.
And what will be then the name of earth and heaven fused?
Paradise.
Hey, Roxy, let me ask this question. Ion, this phrase, heaven is just a sin away, that makes a lot of sense now because I think my own mother, I realized that she thought that in order to gain heaven, you actually had to sin,
right.
That if you thought you were perfect, then you felt left out of the whole Christian mythology. Is that correct?
Precisely. You can't have it without knowing you're absent from it. Good.
Wow. Let's explore that one. No, we already did.
We did that 100 times. But, Carolyn, you can't have the timeless without time. So you're fucked up if you're working towards the timeless and trying to live without time. You're still limited. So if you're trying to be perfect or have heaven, then you have to have a less than state to make heaven knowable. If you want to have bliss, then you have to have contrast to know you had bliss.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to live like me. You don't notice anything. You're fucking barely here. You don't notice what you remembered, what you experienced. You don't remember the ice cream you ate. This is the key to living. Bob. Bob is a non-entity of nothingness.
Bob is the paradise. But
yeah.
Notice the double negative. Notice the double negative there.
I don't know what a double negative is. Did I say a double negative, Carol?
No, I don't think so.
Did I say that?
No, I just said a double negative.
That's not a double negative. I don't think
no,
so.
No.
That's one.
And don't. Do not. No, and do not.
No. What? Oh, you, what? I do not. I don't think you did not say I do not know. Wait a minute, Roxy. Carol's lying. She only said one negative. I don't know. I
said no. I don't think so. See how Bob doesn't even. He doesn't hear nothing.
That's right. You said no.
Bob doesn't hear nothing.
Bob don't know nothing. He can't know nothing, and nothing he don't know is what he doesn't know. So if he don't know what he can't know that he don't
know,
he can't know what he don't know nothing about nothing, right? Because there's nothing about nothing can't get nothing, so he can't have nothing. So it's nothing. So why's this talking about nothing?
Okay. We can calm down now? Okay, go ahead, Roxy.
Yes, because you told me before there is no inside and outside.
There's no inside, yeah.
Yes, yeah, so the kingdom... Yes, is the kingdom part of our body or the paradise is...
It can be. As it is above, as it below. So, yeah, it marries. You're going to hook them all back together. Because, see, from a different level, as a god, you won't be bound by this plane or earth plane. Earthbound spirits, your mother would call them. You're not bound by that. So then you can move to a different level. So now the continuum doesn't engage. So now the world is you and you are the world. Gotta go.
Yes,
so gotta go. Let's hope he can come back. Okay, that means I can read the Zappa thing. what else was I going to say? We may keep this in. For those that listen to our Zappa series, they will hear us talking to the great conductor. I won't delete this part. You know what I mean? They'll be going along. We're talking about Frank reading the Playboy article.
Yes, because
and then all of a sudden we're talking
we're
to Zappa.
Ion. And, what's Ion? There is Ion. That
yeah.
was Ion.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and you'll have the groupie section with Sue standing naked in her bathroom.
Calling in. They don't know why anybody's calling here. What's going on here that people are calling in? So what was it?
GTOs.
Okay, we can maybe finish the Zappa article. Okay, I'm going to mute everybody just to...
All participants are now muted.
Better acoustics. Okay, so Zappa said, a composer who works with rock rather than a simple rock musician with no consciously artistic pretensions. Then says the Phils, or the guys doing the Philharmonic Orchestra, the Phils and Mothers returned after the intermission, and Frank took the mic to say, quote, Mr. Powell has left, and he took the tape with him. So it looks like, you know, Powell got mad and left the thing. And that's a quote from Martin Bernheimer of the Los Angeles Times. So Zappa says, Powell later explained, oh, wait a minute, this is, so this is quoting the article talking about the concert. I don't think Frank says Mr. Powell has left and he took the tape with him. That's all that Frank says. But then the journalist, Martin Bernheimer, fills in some details. Powell later explained his action in terms of, quote, revulsion at the wretched debasement of new music, exploitation of pop mobs, mockery of art, cynical attitude of the Philharmonic management. Typical Zappa causes chaos. And so it goes on saying, Powell insisted his displeasure had little to do with the musical mishap, so it wasn't because his tape wouldn't work. He also claimed that Ernest Fleischman, executive director of the Philharmonic, attempted to bar Powell's exit, threatening never to schedule his compositions again. Fleischman dismissed Powell's behavior as, quote, ridiculously unprofessional. So all kinds of crap. You know, the Philharmonic was trying to raise money for their puny old classical music, and all this ego fighting started. Let's see. Any more? No, Fleischman. Fleischman is the name of Pons and Fleischman, the Cold Fusion guys, 20 years later. 1989, they announced their Cold Fusion breakthrough. So then the article says, and this article is in Playboy, the April 1971 issue. Zappa then gave a brief preamble to 200 Motels. Quote, now he said this to the audience, I wrote this a while ago when I thought symphonic music was where it's at. And when we rehearsed this week, I heard all the errors I made, but we left them in. So you're going to hear them too. It's not really a great piece of music, but I think we can get off a few times. Unquote. In brackets, 200 Motels, we don't get to hear Roxy and Bert laughing. So, is that you? Are you open, Bert and Roxy? Yes.
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 Did we miss laughs? Did you already laugh at what I've been saying?
Yes, because he says he's not respecting the institution of the orchestra or whatever. But I was thinking, like, you have these conventions in
shut up. Hall. I got to mute Carol. How do I mute that? Carol's fucked up. Come on, Carol.
Bob, you need a laugh track. No. Bert and Ross, you're better.
Yeah, like Powell says, he was revulsed at the wretched debasement of new music, exploitation of pop mobs, mockery of art, cynical attitude of the Philharmonic management. Wow, he's pissed off, man. And you know, Frank caused that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, but just the convention of the concert hall, that, like, the musicians come and everybody applauds. And then you don't applaud between the different movements, but at the end, I mean, how could Zappa be part of that, of this repression?
No spontaneity. No repression. Did you say repression? That's a good word. It's repression.
Yeah.
Did you say that?
Yeah, because repressions there because he wants audience to participate and in this convention of the concert hall, like what he's doing is seen as a lack of respect and bad taste.
Right. And this is the Gutenberg era where you passively receive the artistic input. You're a consumer. And once you get into Electric Age, the audience gets into the act and starts participating and making with the artist. And that's what Zappa represents. He represents the co-creation, not the one-way song, Wyndham Lewis called, where people sit back and watch genius in action. So he's interrupting that one-way song. What else? And it's repressed. Yeah, it's very repressed. And he can't be spontaneous. So continuing here, Zappa then gave a brief preamble to 200 Motels. He admits that it's a lousy piece of work. I wrote this a while ago when I thought symphonic music was where it's at. And when we rehearsed this week, I heard all the errors I made. And probably he was totally frustrated by the musicians. But we left them in, so you're going to hear them too. It's not really a great piece of, now that's pretty good. No one's ever introduced, well, this is sort of a lousy piece of music, but we're going to do it anyway. That's pretty humble. It's not really a great piece of music, but I think we can get off a few times. Right, then in brackets, 200 Motels. You see, this is it. It's just like my life. Wherever I was, there was all kinds of fun happening, but nobody else knew it was happening other than the few people there. Where Zappa performed, we heard the recording. Everybody's having a great time, and then Time Magazine disses it. It's like Frank's bringing around this liberating environment, and the establishment can't stand it, and they suppress any reportage of it, you know? So it's like Einstein. We run the world, but Time Magazine won't admit it. And we heard earlier that a lot of people know what Carol's doing, but they do not want to acknowledge her. They're afraid to. So we carry on with our wonderful world, and Time Magazine tries to ignore it. So in brackets it says, 200 Motels represents strains and snatches. Represents strains and snatches written by Zappa in motels and hotels here and in Europe on his road trips. The whole mother, the guy says, the whole mother, or the motherfucker, the whole mother is 2.5 hours long. But one sequence, which required, among other things, a soprano soloist, 3 dancers, a chorus, a narrator, an industrial vacuum cleaner, a noisy 16-millimeter projector, and a dental health film, all that was deleted, cutting this performance to about an hour. So we're getting even more details that we didn't get before, what was actually cut. And I thought that Zubin cut it in the middle of the performance, but it was cut beforehand. And Frank, he went along with whatever conditions Zubin said, because Frank knew this is impossible. He's even going to get a chance to do this. So they could have tied him up, and he still would have done it, just so he knew he could create a scene no matter how much they tried to control him. So they say, "All right, Zubin, hit it," cried Zappa. So this is the second half. They actually had the Philharmonic play the first half. Now in the second half, Zappa's in charge, and they're going to do the whole 200 Motels. So that's when he says, "All right, Zubin, hit it," cried Zappa, initiating the world premiere of 200 Motels. What really happened as it developed was not two bands playing together, but two playing apart. A battle of the bands. It actually turned into a battle of the bands. You know.
It's a battle of two environments fighting. The old
environment. Yeah, the eye versus
and
the ear.
The new tactile.
Yes, the odd-out tactile versus the visual acoustic. And the Deep Purple and the Stones, when they worked with the orchestras, they suppressed themselves. They tried to hide the incompatible conflict and then produce dull compromise. Frank, he knows it's a battle. He's going to fucking have it out with them. So it says, they were not playing together. They were playing apart. And here the mother's superior decibel energy gave them the edge. They were amplified. And the stupid, precious... acoustic orchestra didn't even recognize they didn't even have enough weapon of destruction to even compete. They thought the beauty of their acoustic sound and perfection would be enough to beat Zappa. So it says, a good 8-piece hard rock group with their Fender Stratocasters peaked, and their fuzz tone stomped into action can make a 100-piece symphony sound positively puerile. As to the flavor of 200 Motels, it was eclectic, I mean the music itself. As to the flavor of 200 Motels, it was eclectic, to say the least. In other words, Zappa is always eclectic. He's scanning the acoustic environment, the landscape, right? The media landscape. It's always going to be like finding its wake. It began with a good, hard-driving rock passage, and then segued into a light motif that soon began to be identified each time it came round as, quote, Brigitte Bardot, 1957. That was the motif, Brigitte Bardot, 1957. So then it says, then the fills came in with an atonal passage during which the mothers, having a 75-bar rest or so, insouciantly, indifferently lit up Winston's. So the mothers, they lit up cigarettes as they let the stupid symphony perform its crap. Did you get that? I don't hear any laughter. They lit up cigarettes and sat there, well, what the fuck is this crap? This is not even worth listening to. So they insouciantly lit up their Winstons. So there's a whole, it's more theater than anything. Other echoes that could be caught throughout the piece. So the orchestra is playing, you know, what Zappa's written, and there are excerpts of Dvorak's New World Symphony and Victory at Sea, Guadalcanal March, and Beneath the Southern Cross. So that's all Dvorak. So Dvorak's Victory at Sea, in brackets, Guadalcanal March, and Beneath the Southern Cross. Then Debussy's Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun, Aaron Copland's Appalachian Spring, Virgil Thompson's The Plow That Broke the Plains, and Honky Tonk Jazz. All this was punctuated by Zappa telling the audience, quote, laughing is very easy. All you have to do is go, ha, ha, ha. Okay, he's telling the audience to laugh as an orchestrated environment. Followed, and he says, so he said that to the audience, laughing is very easy. All you have to do is go, ha, ha, ha. Followed by nearly 14,000 risible or laughing patrons doing just that. So they actually did it. Mother Motorhead making yodeling sounds, a little soft shoe in unison by the mothers, a voice from the upper deck intoning a mighty ooh, ah, followed by Zappa yelling, shut up, you idiot! This is a good description, right? Some guy was told to orchestrate the yell and interrupt the thing, and Zappa got to tell the guy to shut up. A member of the symphony brass tearing his music to shreds and throwing it into the air. He's showing the changes that people are going through under the electronic bombardment, actually privately going through at home. Followed by the string section crying, barf! So the member rips up his own piece of paper.
Is not used to be quiet anymore, and they are expecting the people just to listen all these pieces for a long time, and they're in a sports hall, so it's an absurd
right.
situation. That's I think.
Of them exploiting him for him to say some other stuff. And so it says, so the whole string section yells out, barf, in brackets. Could this be the promised bodily noises? I guess Frank promised bodily noises. Then the Phils and the mothers exchanging friendly insults. Topped off by Zappa crying. Yeah, they actually were programmed to tell each other to go fuck themselves, so he's making the war right in front. And then it's topped off by Zappa crying, horse shit. It's pretty good, eh? The Phils goofing a few bars with Maida apologizing with a big operatic shrug to Zappa. They planned even mistakes. Mother Ray Collins holding up a toy giraffe, which then gave birth to a rubber chicken, some flickering blue flash bulbs on the jungle gym that held the stage lights, a sort of dime store light show, a cheap light show, a UFO gliding down from way up above, turning out to be a glow-in-the-dark frisbee. a sequence in which only one mother played and the others faked it silently. That's pretty good, eh? A total happening, total ruckus. Wow, and you get none of that in Time magazine. All they said was Frank and the other guy didn't get along and it was a failure. This is hardly a fucking failure. No wonder Frank was pissed off at journalists. They didn't describe things properly. So then it says, during all this, the audience seemed attentive, but not really turned on. Not exactly the kind of concert where you need 500 rent-a-cops to keep things in order. At the end of 200 motels, well, they were probably in shock at what they were witnessing, at the incongruity of visual space and tactile space. At the end of 200 motels, there was a minute or two standing ovation. Well, look, they got a standing ovation. Although one cynical critic suggested the ovation might have been prompted by the audience wanting to hear the mothers in encore. So they even put that down. And so the mothers, and so they did. Zappa did give an encore. Zappa announced to the Philharmonics, okay, any of you fellows who desire to play rock, join us. So he's actually acting for defections. Any of you fellows who desire to play rock, join us. You'll not get any overtime. See, he points out the money. You'll join us, but no overtime. No overtime. He used to always complain that the bands would, you know, carry on. There's this song I didn't play called Yo Cats about the lousy studio musicians and how they'll fuck things up to get overtime. So he says, you can join us, you'll not get any overtime, and we'll play our version of King Kong. 8 or 10 fills, all of them young, brought their axes up, mainly brass and reeds, including one awkward bassoon. Zappa says, quote, when I go like this, horn players pick any note at random, attack it, and swell it up. We need a cello. In brackets, an obliging cellist walks up. It's a very simple melody, key of E flat minor, key of E flat minor, for as long as you can take it. You got to play key of E flat as long as you can. The session began with the bassoonist starting off a little badly by bumping Motorhead with the swan's neck of his instrument. But then, in later passages, coming on so strong that there's no doubt that if they ever get this on an LP, you hear one of the great bassoon riffs in rock symphony history. The beauty of the bassoon is that it is a double reed instrument with bass and tenor registers. This affords it tremendous flexibility, so it can come in on the low shots and then suddenly space you out on the high stuff, often before you can even realize it is the same instrument. Also, bassoons have a very small solo music literature, and so you can bet your ass if you invite a bassoonist into a session, you're going to get wiped. He's hungry. They never get an opportunity to do a solo, so Frank's liberating the bassoonist. 200 motels, the composition, will not break upon, and 200 motels will not break upon an unsuspecting world with the cultural shock of Handel's Messiah. But it seems beyond belief that a figure of the virtuosity and energy of Frank Zappa has been so long neglected by the media. For example, television. Now there it is. The guy said it. Amazing how Bob has been ignored. Bob's musical student. Then it says, Zappa's eye and ear for stuff.
I think this is a way in which these old environments are trying to keep alive because they know the innovation is going to blast them. It's going to blast all the old science, all the history, all the medicine. So the only thing they can do is ignore you or Zappa as long as they can, but that's just to survive a little longer, but things become
futile.
And they have to go. Yeah,
right.
So that's the real reason.
Right, and there was something I was going to add to that. That's why David Wally, who wrote the first biography of Zappa, told me personally that he was shocked when Time magazine gave such a huge obituary of Zappa. He got no coverage in Time magazine. And then when he died, they say, this is a major American composer. So they weren't going to tell anybody when he was alive. Now, here's Frank. He does this one failed event, and nobody gets a whole Playboy article written about it. There's nobody writing about any fucking thing that happened in any other auditorium in New York City. Like, he's, you know, that's the point here. He did get coverage. It was a big success. The fucking Playboy commissioned this huge article about the whole thing. So Frank did get noticed. Everybody knew he was a national treasure, but the bullshit Android Meme Central headquarters wouldn't admit it. But we'll change all that. Remember, the Evergreens predicted that someday this will be known as the Frank Zappa era. It has to be. He's the only guy that did everything. Yeah, like, by Wawa and that, he changed music. By inventing it, you have millions of groups, once the Wawa comes along, changes their music. Frank caused that. So it says, Zappa's eye and ear for Southern California schlock pop detail are faultless. The boy in the song, "You Didn't Try to Call Me," on the Freakout album, tells a girl who rejected him, quote, "I reprimered the right front fender, man, and you didn't try to call me. I thought you were my teen angel, man." So there it is. He reprimered his right front fender. That's the lyric. Then it says, Ruben Sano himself, that's Ruben of Ruben of the Jets, quoting what he says. Ruben Sano, then there's Ruben Sano himself who says, quote, then there's Ruben Sano himself who was, quote, 19 when he quit the group to work on his car. There were already 11 other guys in the band, so when he quit, nobody missed him, except for his car, when they had to go to rehearsal or play for a battle of the bands at the American Legion Post in Chino. Ruben has three dogs, Benny, Baby, and Martha. Then it says, or the boy, and you're probably wondering why I'm here. Here's the lyrics. You tore a big hole in your convertible top. What will you tell your mom and pop? Or Willie the Pimp on Hot Rats. Man in the suit with a bow tie neck, want to buy a grunt with a third party check. Or the teeny bopper in Mother Mania, who is, quote, only 13 and she knows how to nasty, unquote. Or the guy in the song later that night, don't go, baby, don't put me out on the street. You threw my best shark skin suit out on the lawn, right on top of some dog waste. End of that lyric. So, ending the article. It may be, of course, that Frank has been upstaged by the Abby Hoffmans, the Yippies, and the Jerry Rubens, who have purloined his cheerfully mad, earthy motherness from the underground and the bandstand and brought it into the streets and the papers. What is certain, though, after the concert, is that classical and rock are as unmixable and unblendable as the rock and scissors of the pantomime game. Consciousness 2 versus Consciousness 3. Actually, it's not. It was a success. They showed the incompatibility, but they still produced a great show. So what's the problem here? For classical is a product. Now, look, he's going to explain this. For classical is a product of Western civilization's sublimation, meaning to repress the sexual impulses and to sublime them, while rock is anti-sublimation. Then it quotes Frank. The big beat matches the body rhythm, says Frank. And then in another place, Zappa says, quote, to deny rock music's place in the society was to deny sexuality. Any parent who tried to keep his child from listening to or participating in this musical ritual was, in the eyes of the child, trying to castrate him. Remember, that was in that Life magazine article in June 1968, called The Oracle Has It All. We went through that. Then it says, getting your shit together, that phrase, in quotes, getting your shit together is a vogue phrase now. It's what everyone really is trying to do, even Nixon and Agnew, though they wouldn't use the phrase. Frank seems to think that the big beat can be successfully osterized with the big bands or symphony big bands, satisfying a lower middle class yearning he seems to have long had for the technical expertise and precision of symphonic music. But getting it together may not be that easy. We may have to do it alone. At any rate, whatever Frank Zappa does, you know it will be up front, whatever else it is. The Blacks have a nice portmanteau phrase. Quote, go head on. G-O-H-E-A-D-O-N. Go head on. You know that phrase, Bert? Go head on? Oh, Bert got dropped off. Is that you, Bert?
No, what does that mean?
Yes.
Yeah, do you know that phrase, go head on? Go head on.
Yes.
That's a Black phrase.
Go ahead. Just go ahead.
Go ahead.
Go ahead on. Just keep going. Yeah, go ahead.
Go head on. And so he says, the blacks have a nice portmanteau phrase, go head on, meaning keep doing what you're doing. And then it ends, yeah. Go head on, Frank. Now, Frank did say that years later. Why are you successful, Frank? He said, I just kept doing what I was doing. You just keep doing it. So I don't know if it's a lower middle class yearning. It could be just as the East goes West and the West goes East, since he comes from the oral Italian culture, he may be trying to become visual space via Britain, the British representing a visual bias. So a lower middle class yearning, he seems to have long had for the technical expertise and precision of symphonic music. Well, how about he's including every modality, and he must include the expertise of symphonic music in his palette, in his collage. You know, it's not necessarily a yearning. It's if he's going to have electric tactility swallow everything, he must have every kind of music in his repertoire. So you got to have that symphonic thing. Okay, there it is. A marvelous article. And that completes the Frank Zappa thing. Bravo. Now, we got
Maestro
no.
I'm going to.
Maestro Bob, yes. Maestro. So now. What's so funny, Bert? I'm a maestro. What are you laughing
at? No, I was just saying. Yes, that you are a maestro. You are a maestro.